The Justice Department is asking Congress for more resources to fight cybercrime. Just yesterday, a top official told senators cyber criminals are becoming so sophisticated that the department, and the FBI in particular, are adapting their tactics and tools on a minute-by-minute basis. That might not be fast enough, though. The FBI estimates 500 million computers are infected by botnets every year, meaning that there are 18 victims per second. For perspective, we turn to former Secret Service agent Levi Gundert. He's now a technical lead with Cisco's Threat Research Analysis and Communications team. He says the government deserves credit for building partnerships that can track and find cyber criminals.
Even if they're international, they're using Interpol. They're putting in red notices into the system so that even though they may not be able to capture or extradite from a particular country, these folks travel. They go on vacation. And so they're using systems like that to capture people and to bring them back to face trial in the United States. One of the most recent examples of this is in the Maldives. So there was actually an attacker who was on vacation in the Maldives, and he was recently extradited to Guam. So I think they're doing a great job. I think they can always use more resources, both personnel and logistics. But I think that there's been a marked improvement in the way that they're doing attribution and they're going after these cyber threat actors.
When you're dealing with a country like China, which isn't necessarily a partner with the U.S. when it comes to cybersecurity, how can you investigate and go after cybercrime?
Federal agents and the folks that partner with them are very good at running investigations. And there are cookie crumbs or trails that everyone leaves digitally. And so it really is a matter of time in being able to collect these and analyze these and run them back to their logical conclusion. And so everyone's getting better at doing that. And it's impossible to perform these attacks without leaving digital footprints. It's just a matter of how complex are they? You know, what sort of lengths are they going to hide their tracks? And so in some of these cases, there is very good evidence to tie these attacks back to specific people with specific names, specific images, and specific locations.
And you've said that it helps if you are looking ahead what might happen in terms of a security breach. How do you do that?
I think that, to your point, you pay attention to what's going on, not just in your industry, but other industries as well. And you look at the threat-centric model. So, you know, we've really been talking a lot about this, but you dig into, you understand down in the weeds what's happening. So, you know, whether it's a protocol vulnerability in something like Heartbleed with SSL and certificates and the way that everyone depends on that, or whether it's a malvertising attack, malware that's being injected into advertising networks, whether you're being compromised through spear phishing, you know, really just focusing on all the different types of attacks and the way that they're accomplished so that if it does, hopefully not, but if and when it does, it's not something completely new to you that you've never heard of, you've never seen, you just don't expect because you're really digging into that threat landscape.
You've talked about how partnering is essential with the example of Interpol, but what about partnering with the private sector? This seems like something that the United States has worked really, really hard to do, particularly the Department of Homeland Security, and yet we have these incidents like the Target breach that show there's so much work to be done.
There's absolutely a lot of work to be done. I don't think anybody can overemphasize that. But there have been really good partnerships formed. You make a great point about Homeland Security and some of their efforts. And I think informally, the relationships that are formed at conferences, on mailing lists, with law enforcement and the private sector, sometimes informally, those relationships are really strong and build over time. And those are crucial to making sure that when a breach happens, that people can collect the information they need in a timely manner. And a lot of times what that means is sometimes orders are sent out to retain data, so preservation orders. And that's great because even though it's going to take law enforcement some time to work through the process of gaining subpoenas or writing affidavits for search warrants to collect digital evidence, when they can go out and they can basically send that notice to say, we know this data or evidence is here, please preserve it for us, you know, and we will be coming with the proper legal orders following, that's one of those tools that the private sector better understands now so that they can say, okay, you know, we're going to do our due diligence and help where we can.
And is that because people have actually, from the government, have actually reached out and taken the time to explain these steps and the procedures?
Absolutely, absolutely. I see many examples of that where there's a back and forth dialogue with agents at the federal and the state level, with a lot of the organizations that have the data they need. So obviously, everybody uses things like free webmail services, and criminals are no exception. So those are the kinds of services where almost universally there's going to be data that needs to be analyzed there. And so there's a much more communication going on to explain, here's how we work as law enforcement, here's how you can help. And I think that the private sector is really responding to that. And even though law enforcement can't always talk about where they are in the investigation, I think that the private sector is really excited to help, and they're grateful to know that law enforcement is working on this problem.
We're speaking with Levi Guntert. He's the technical lead at Cisco's Threat Research Analysis and Communications team. Does the private sector, or do those on more broadly on the receiving end, have the equivalent knowledge and skills to know if a federal agent comes to you and says, we've got to work together in this cyber problem, that they can do it?
I think so. I think resources is always an issue. One of the issues that faces government, especially, I think, is retaining the smart and the talented employees. And I think that compensation is a piece of that in keeping up with the private sector. And even the private sector is having a problem retaining people in this space because the skill set is really in demand. It's very hot right now.
And maybe you're a good example of that because you went from the Secret Service to Cisco. Companies like Target, or like name any company, do they have that talented cyber workforce that they need?
I think it's a mixed bag, and obviously it's different organization by organization. But I think for the CISOs out there especially, making sure that it's a priority for you to not only find the right people but to retain them is really important. And I think it's not just compensation. It's also about ensuring that folks feel like they can really keep their skill set sharp and up to date. And that means budget for training. That means resources for skills and workshops. So there's a lot of great tools out there, but if you don't have the right people, it doesn't matter. And so I think for CISOs, that really should be their number one priority right now, is making sure that they do have those right people and that they can retain them, because it's just such a hot field that it's becoming a real challenge for folks in senior management.
And CISOs being the chief information security officers at the companies.
Exactly.
And that gets back to what we were talking about a bit with the cyber crime. You mentioned that there's always a need for training. It seems like the crime is always evolving, and there was even recent notice that there might be a new form of game over Zeus. Something that the FBI worked very hard to disrupt just a few months ago.
Yeah, I think what we see is a pattern over and over again of takedowns and a piece of malware, a suite of malicious code being fired up again. And the reason why is because criminals are opportunists. And when they see a hole, they see a void, they're going to fill it. And so we saw this particularly with exploit kits, which are basically collections of malicious code that you don't have to be technical to use. You just have to be willing to be a criminal, a bad guy. And so Ponch was arrested in Russia in October, and this was an individual that was responsible for the Black Hole exploit kit, which was far and away the most popular exploit kit for criminals to purchase in the underground and use. And after he was arrested, what we saw was this explosion of new exploit kit families with names like Fiesta and Styx, and, you know, they have their own branding, they have their own sales force and technical support, and it's really incredible to watch. And so I think it's the same thing to your game over reference, is that if there's an opportunity and the code base still exists, somebody else is going to start it up because there's money to be made there.
How can the good guys get one up on the bad guys?
Vigilance. I think that being vigilant about the threats that are out there. We're still dealing with some of the older issues like phishing and spear phishing. The web is a little bit newer, but being aware that just because you're visiting a high-profile, high-trafficked website doesn't mean that you're not going to be compromised through a third-party advertising network. And so I think it comes back to not necessarily trusting or relying on things to be secure. that you understand the threats, you understand what's possible, and so you're not shocked when this stuff happens because you really do understand the threats and you're being vigilant about them.
It recently came out that the Office of Personnel Management, which keeps the government's files on those who have applied for security clearances, suffered a cyber breach. This happened back in March, just came out in the public now, several months later. Is this type of delay in public notice A, typical, and B, is it a problem?
So those are good questions. On the first question, I think it is typical. I think generally speaking, whether it's government or private sector, we see this pattern over and over again. And I think what's happening is organizations first want to get a handle on what exactly happened, exactly what data was compromised, and how long was it compromised. And in order to come up with those answers and really gain reality, it takes a bit of time. And oftentimes, they want to call in third parties to help augment the investigation. And so we see that occurring over and over again on both sides. To your second point, it is problematic in that it's taking so long to respond, in my opinion. Again, I think it's a resources issue, and I think that organizations need to expect that when they're holding data that's potentially sensitive in any way and can be used either for intellectual property, economic advantage, or criminal gain in any way, you have to expect that that data is going to be targeted. At some point, it's going to be targeted. And so I think FBI Director Mueller actually said it really well a couple years ago to Congress. He said, it's not a matter of are you going to be compromised? It's a matter of when are you going to be compromised? And so I think that if organizations take that approach and that mindset from the get-go, they're going to be much better prepared to deal with these data breaches and really accelerate the cycle of notification to the public.